This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Should have been in prison. She was actually shot herself and wounded and paralyzed at the time that the person who she was convicted of killing was shot. So she obviously couldn't have shot him. And she also was arrested, which caused the incident, for about 8 different charges, which she later was found not guilty of or were dismissed. So I think it's unfortunate. Sauda Shakur, I believe, will historically be proven to be a hero of our time.
Shokoi Lumumba, like, we're going to have to leave it there. Mayor-elect of Jackson, Mississippi, thanks for joining us. I'll be at the 92nd Street Y tonight with Ralph Nader. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's 5 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for the evening news. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University's new Bachelor of Arts in Media and Film Studies, where you can explore how media in all forms affect not only how we view the world, but how we shape it. Adults of all ages choose Merrillhurst to gain knowledge from professors who practice what they teach. Now enrolling for fall term. Information at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO. And from Dr. Robert Amajoy and the Northwest Center for Colorectal Health, LLC, providing screening colonoscopy to help prevent colorectal cancer, as well as minimally invasive management of colorectal disease. Offices in Portland and Milwaukee. Detailed information at 503-216-5380 or nwcch.com.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to Creative Collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland, featuring the live music and art exhibits of creative entrepreneurs who are living on the streets. There are also family activities to enjoy, food, and a beer garden, all organized by Creative Collaborations in support of struggling artists and in an effort to stimulate the local neighborhood economy as well. Hump Day PDX is June 12th from 6 to 10 p.m. and every second Wednesday of the month thereafter at Southeast 9th and Belmont in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a newly revealed court order by the National Security Agency sees phone records of millions of Verizon customers transferred into government hands.
The state budget battle over public employee pensions continues, with proponents of PERS cuts gathering today at the Capitol.
And consumer groups call for a moratorium on testing of genetically modified crops.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 6th, 2013. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Right to Dream 2 is sponsoring the third annual Pitch a Tent Homeless Bill of Rights event tomorrow, Friday, June 7th, starting 9 a.m. at Northwest 4th and Burnside. Purposefully falling on the eve of the Rose Parade, the event is a public campout designed to raise awareness about the criminalization of homelessness in Portland. Every year, camping on the streets of Portland is made legal for one night so that people may stake out prime locations from which to view the parade. Critics of the city's camping ban are hoping to point out that while pitching a tent for pleasure is legal, pitching a tent for survival is not. KBOO reporter Joe Lino spoke with Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Dream 2 for more on this story.
What exactly will the action look like, and what are the main points you're expecting them to convey?
We're trying to convey 2 points. The action is going to be that we're going to put tents along the parade route like we always do. We're going to have entertainment from a lot of activists in this. That's in solidarity with us from the city and Seattle and Eugene and San Francisco. We're going to have a guest speaker, rap Paul Bowden from Rap out of San Francisco, which California is working on their homeless bill of rights, and Leo Rose, the author of Pitcher Tent, he's going to speak, and we're going to have Mike Crenshaw, the radical cheerleader. We're going to have the Marisha Missing Valley Dancers. We're going to have Jeff Zucker and the Fire Throwers. Hopefully, Adam Campanelli and his band. And we're going to have drum circles from street musicians from within the city. And plenty, plenty more. And the theme of the Homeless Bill of Rights is that Rhode Island and Illinois passed their Homeless Bill of Rights law. California's working on theirs, and so is Oregon. We're trying hard to get that established, that so houseless people can have equal rights. People shouldn't be criminalized from exercising their human rights, and that's sleep and using the restroom and having hygiene centers where they can take showers and wash their clothes and look presentable, instead of going around with, you know, smelling and walking around in dirty clothes. They allow people that live in houses to come out and pitch up tents to watch a parade. And we try to make a statement that why is it all right for people who live in houses can pitch a tent up, where people who live in the streets can't pitch a tent up. And we're not saying it should be on the sidewalk. What we're saying, it should be, you know, in a designated area where people have a form of security and a safe place to rest or to reside at until they can get housing as a in the meantime thing.
What's your current situation with the city?
Current situation with the city, we established a lawsuit against them, and they still suing us $1,300 a month for doing their job, for helping people.
What's your current involvement with the Village Building Convergence all about?
Well, what they did, they're in solidarity with us, and they helped us get these doors to put up new fences because the city was saying that our fence was too high, but it was for security reasons. So we come in compliance with them and got new doors and put up some new doors, and now we're offering like $100 a door to put up your own theme that had to do with homelessness, or your own organization logo, or just your name. But this is a fundraiser. We're charging $100 a door to come paint something on our door. Show solidarity with Right to Dream Too and Right to Survive.
And is that part of the third annual Pitch a Tent event?
Yes. And right now I'm painting the door as I speak to you. Come out to Pitch a Tent.
I've been speaking with Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Dream Too. This is Joe Lino with KBOO News.
Walmart workers in 12 cities across the country are currently staging the longest strike in Walmart history. The workers are calling for fair wages and working conditions and have accused the company of retaliating against workers who've tried to organize a union. Thousands of workers and their supporters will gather outside Walmart's annual shareholders meeting tomorrow to protest the company's policies. Some shareholders are also planning to bring up the issue of worker mistreatment inside the meeting and ask the company to increase its standard minimum wage from $8 an hour. In addition, protesters are concerned about a standard Walmart practice known as market saturation, where the company builds multiple stores in a target area in order to drive out competition. 3 years ago, the Walmart Corporation announced a plan to build 17 stores here in the Portland area. 6 of these have already been built, 1 has been postponed, and 2 proposed superstores in Sherwood and Tigard are facing organized community opposition. 3 protests will be held in the Portland area tomorrow afternoon as part of the National Day of Action Against Walmart. One of these will be outside the Walmart store at Southeast 82nd Avenue and Holgate. Another one will be at the proposed site of the Walmart store in Sherwood, and the third will be at the site of a superstore slated to be built in Tigard.
Late yesterday afternoon, a committee of the Oregon House of Representatives held a public hearing on the issue of paid sick leave. A bill introduced in the House Rules Committee would require most employers in the state to provide their workers with some amount of paid sick leave. Here's an excerpt from testimony at that hearing.
I think if you've been following what's been going on in people's lives in this terrible economy, it doesn't take too much imagination to think about just how many Oregonians are faced with a really unfortunate choice on a regular basis, and that choice is to be able to stay home when they're sick, to be able to stay home with a child who's sick, or need to go to work and earn a paycheck and be at work when they really shouldn't be and when it's not in the benefit of the employee or their employer for them to be there. And just to give you an idea of the magnitude of this problem, there really are, and it may be hard for some of us to believe, almost 600,000 people who are employed and do not have even one paid sick day that they can take when they're sick or a family member like a child needs them. And perhaps even more shocking, about half of those 600,000 people don't have any paid time off whatsoever that they can take. So it's not an option for them to take a vacation day because they don't have paid vacation, they don't have paid sick time, they just need to be at work every day no matter what their circumstances. And I think that the bill that you're going to be hearing about from a number of people who've been working hard on this would really go a long way to, it's not going to totally solve that problem, but it would go a long way to making life more livable for people, acknowledging the fact that we do have people working at very low wage jobs because overwhelmingly the people that we're talking about are not earning all that much money on the job. And yet, like everybody else, and perhaps even more than you and me, they're often living paycheck to paycheck. They're often single moms. They're often people where both family members are working, and there really is nobody to deal with those health care emergencies that strike all of us.
When parents can't take time off to care for their sick children, children go to school sick. Parents don't have a choice, and their kids go to school sick. Now, first of all, it's very hard to learn when you're sick. And second of all, it's very easy to spread your germs to another kid, which only compounds the problem. Children get better faster when they're able to stay home and rest appropriately, get the appropriate TLC from their parents. Parents worry less when they're able to be home with their kids, and so their productivity at work is improved. Representative Vega Peterson, I know, is going to talk more about the economic issues that encourage us to move this bill forward. But without paid sick time, caring for a sick child or taking a child for appropriate preventive care is a really significant problem. It's just better for our kids in general.
I have worked for the same grocery store for 15 years, and while I have some paid sick hours, I can't actually use them until the third day that I'm sick. On top of that, I had to bring a doctor's note or else I would get in big trouble. I can't afford to lose 2 days' pay, and I certainly can't afford to go to the doctor on top of that. As a result, I do go to work sick all the time. When I absolutely can't get to work because I'm so sick, and I stayed home without pay, I had to decide which bills wouldn't get paid. I do my best to keep it from affecting my children, but I don't always succeed. Even though I had worked for the same employer for 15 years, I worried about being fired if I was sick. As a mother, I've had to stay home sick occasionally, not only for my own sickness, but also for my children's.
That was an excerpt of the testimony at yesterday's hearing in the Oregon House of Representatives on the issue of paid sick leave.
Marion County Circuit Court Judge Dennis Graves said on Wednesday that he would grant an injunction in a lawsuit against the Service Employees International Union, or SEIU. The injunction will require the union to hold a meeting for all of its rank-and-file members, as well as release some membership information. The lawsuit, brought by former SEIU Local 503 President Joe DiNicola, surrounds alleged violations of state nonprofit law by the union. DiNicola has already won a restraining order preventing the union from holding a vote to dissolve its nonprofit status before calling a meeting of all members to discuss it. Such a meeting is required under nonprofit law. A hearing is scheduled for July 9th to further discuss the injunction, which Judge Graves has not yet issued in writing.
The Oregon House of Representatives today approved a bill that spells out when gray wolves can be killed in the state. The vote comes after months of negotiation between wildlife protection groups, ranchers, and government officials, and represents a compromise that most parties support. The removal of the gray wolf from the federal endangered species list, despite the fact that the number of wolves is still extremely small, has led the state to take more action to protect both wolves and livestock. Representative Holvey voted in favor of the bill, but said that he still had some concerns about wolves being killed for doing what they do naturally.
I had a little bit of concern about this and in committee, and wanted to further explore some of the issues around rangelands that are also included in this bill. It's not just about wolves on private lands taking cattle, but it's also about wolves taking cattle on rangelands, which are public lands, our BLM, National Forest as such. And I had a little bit of concern that the amount of predations that need to take place to qualify for a chronic predation situation, which allows the taking of wolves, is 4 in a 6-month period. And so when you're on rangelands in a free range, you have wolves out there, and people are choosing to take their cattle out there and graze in a habitat where I think we would expect the wolves to be. And so I have concerns that the predations that happen on public lands are counted towards that chronic description, that chronic definition. That then will subsequently result in potentially the taking of wolves. And I also have the concerns that the activity around taking those wolves, if in fact they're taken on those public lands, could actually chase those wolves out of an area where we would expect that we would want them, in those free areas.
That bill passed the House and will now go to the Senate for approval. Also in the Oregon House today, Representative Chris Gorsuch from Troutdale added an amendment to a bill about TriMet, which orders the Secretary of State to carry out a performance audit of the regional transit agency. The amended bill would change the appointment of TriMet's board from the governor to the regional government known as Metro. Gorsuch says he added the amendment to address concerns with TriMet finances, operations, and transparency that have come to the surface over the last year. At the end of today's House session, Representative Parrish raised the issue of bills being killed in committee despite having widespread support. As an example, she brought up a bill that she had introduced that would have exempted Oregon service members serving overseas from having to pay for expensive internet services.
Colleagues, I've been here now. This is the coming close of the, almost close to the close of the second full session I've been here. I've yet to still figure out if policy dictates budget or if budget dictates policy. And if budget dictates policy, then I'm not sure why we have policy committees. In 2011, I brought a bill forward that would help our deploying soldiers. And the 6 members, 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats of that committee, voted yes unanimously. And it got sent down to the Tax Credits Committee where it died. We brought that bill back again. And our newly formed committee with the same 6 members, 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats, who were here in 2011, and our newest member to that committee, who I believe in House District 51, the representative from House District 51, that Camp Withicum is in your district, voted unanimously on that same bill, and now it's down in the Revenue Committee, where I was told that it will not get a hearing. It got moved to the Revenue Committee in March. This bill would give a tax credit to deployed soldiers who have to pay $100 a month for the internet while they are deployed overseas, and our federal government charges them money to communicate with their families. Now, if we were charged $100 a month as legislators, we probably have another bill about legislators and pay. $100 a month for an E-2 soldier whose family already qualifies for food stamps is a lot of money. And so when I bring forward money bills or I support bills that spend money, I ask, will it prevent something? Will it save us money down the road? And so if you ask what a bill about helping a soldier pay for the internet to communicate with their family while they're deployed overseas will prevent, well, it might prevent their suicide. It might prevent a divorce. It might prevent conversations about how they deal with the money in the household when the money is short. And so if we respect the decisions of our policy colleagues who serve on policy committees, then I think it's important when the money bills get to your desk, if you're Ways and Means members or revenue members or tax credit members, that we hear them, that we have the conversations. And I don't think we vote unanimously on a bill, bipartisan, if it's not good policy, colleagues. Thank you.
That was Republican State Representative Julie Parrish from Tualatin speaking at today's Organ House session in Salem.
This morning, on the steps of the Oregon State Capitol in Salem, the group Fix PERS Now held a press conference to put pressure on Oregon lawmakers to make deep cuts in the Public Employee Retirement System, or PERS. Fix PERS Now is a coalition of individuals as well as educational and business groups, including the Oregon Business Association, Stand for Children, OregonBusinessPlan.org, and the Oregon School Boards Association, or OSBA. Lawmakers are in the middle of rocky, closed-door negotiations over a proposed public school budget, which would see $7 billion in state money go to schools in exchange for cuts to PERS amounting to $1 billion over a two-year period. This is not as drastic as a previous cut proposed by Governor John Kitzhaber. However, the Department of Justice has advised that less severe measures would be more likely to survive inevitable lawsuits from teachers' unions and PERS retirees receiving less than their contractually promised monthly payments. The budget will likely go to the Senate for a vote on Monday. KBOO reporter Sam Bowman spoke with OSBA Executive Director Betsy Miller-Jones, one of the speakers at the press conference.
What was the aim of this press conference?
It was to talk about the need for the legislators to come to agreement on PERS reform.
What reforms in particular are you looking for?
Well, our school board members from around the state, and we had several of them there, as well as parents from districts, are looking for the legislature to make reforms which will address the issues that they have addressed to establish Oregon's commitment to education funding and solve PERS that's been taking millions of education dollars out of the classroom where they belong. The governor and the legislative leaders have responded to the outcry for change. They've committed to a significant restoration of education funding, and they're still working to find a balance on PERS reform that's both fair to retirees and helps our K-12 education system, because we've had thousands of teacher layoffs over the last 5 years. A third of our school districts are running four-day weeks. We have the third highest class sizes in the country. And the legislators right now are near a solution that would create real reform to the PERS system that would put dollars back into the classrooms that are desperately needed. We believe that teachers, parents, communities, and most of all, kids in Oregon deserve a deal that balances these interests and appropriately funds education.
Given that every PERS recipient has legal standing and that it's likely that any reform that takes money out of the monthly payment could be challenged, what would you say to the idea that it will inevitably be taken to court, any reform?
You know, anything can be challenged, and I would expect that some of these would be challenged, but we have had them vetted by attorneys who are very knowledgeable and respected in this field, and they have told us that all of the suggested reforms are defensible and that should withstand a court challenge. Given the severity and the long-term implications of this problem, I believe that we have to address it and make the changes and then work that out through the court system, take on those challenges. It just is not something we can afford in the interest of our kids and our education. We cannot afford to back away from it at this time. We've had all of these suggested changes looked at, researched, vetted by knowledgeable attorneys, and they are telling us that the ones that are being put forward are valid and should withstand a court challenge.
For KBOO Evening News, this is Sam Bowman.
Two separate rulings by Oregon's Supreme Court this morning refer to the mortgage industry and the way they perform foreclosures on Oregon homeowners. Both decisions regard MERS, or the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. MERS is a controversial national database created to keep track of mortgage loan ownership, used by lenders to streamline the process of transferring loans between different parties. Today's rulings pertain to whether MERS can stand in for individual lenders in real estate deeds and whether lenders can use MERS to avoid recording each loan ownership transfer with Oregon counties. They follow rulings on MERS made earlier in the Oregon Court of Appeals. Today's decisions may affect lenders' choices between in-court and out-of-court foreclosure processes, the latter of which lenders have historically preferred as a time and cost-saving measure. Today, I spoke with Angela Martin, Executive Director of the group Economic Fairness Oregon, for more information on the substance of the MERS rulings and the implications for both lenders and homeowners facing foreclosures.
Can you comment on how the use of MERS by lenders has been problematic for Oregon homeowners facing foreclosures?
This question all comes down to homeowners and their right to know who has the authority to foreclose on them. The entity that has the authority is also the one that has the ability to approve or not approve loan modifications. So it is important for the homeowners to be able to determine, again, who has the legal right to conduct a foreclosure on their home. MERS system made that more opaque to homeowners. It was difficult, if not in some instances, impossible for the homeowner to determine who the owner of their loan is. The reason for the MERS system from the bank's perspective is it really is a cost savings for them. It makes the transactions of transferring one loan among a group of lenders a lot less expensive.
So moving on, I guess, then to the decisions made today by Oregon Supreme Court, what does the decision that MERS cannot stand in as a beneficiary in real estate deeds mean for how lenders will be acting in the future?
The decision handed down from the Oregon Supreme Court today is really a mixed bag. There was a win for homeowners and a win for lenders. On the homeowner's side, the court established that MERS cannot be the beneficiary. Now, that creates some uncertainty for the lenders who wanted to just be able to use MERS as the proxy of the beneficiary, no question asked. But when you look at the second half of the court's ruling, you see that while MERS cannot be the beneficiary, they certainly can continue acting as the agent for the beneficiary. What that means is lenders will have the opportunity to start using non-judicial foreclosure process again. MERS can transfer the loans amongst themselves, and not every one of those assignments needs to be publicly recorded. Now, the court did give the homeowners one opportunity and said that a homeowner can challenge the ownership of that loan and challenge that the proper entity, the proper lender, is foreclosing on them. So while banks can use MERS in our non-judicial foreclosure arena, homeowners can challenge and assert that the right lender isn't foreclosing on them.
And the fact that these out-of-court foreclosures are cleared to proceed by this ruling, how does that affect lenders' participation in foreclosure mediation programs?
At the end of the day, homeowners are still in a more protected and a better place here in Oregon, thanks to Senate Bill 558. The foreclosure resolution program, or mediation, will work for homeowners facing a non-judicial foreclosure or a judicial foreclosure. Now, we don't know yet how lenders are going to respond to today's court ruling. We might see a return to non-judicial foreclosures, or they may continue with judicial foreclosures because of the uncertainty that homeowners might still challenge who the true lender is before a judge. Homeowners will have access to mandatory mediation regardless of how their lender chooses to foreclose. And that's really the protection we were looking for.
I've been speaking with Angela Martin, the Executive Director of Economic Fairness Oregon. This has been Jen Chavez for KABU News.
An evidence technician with the Oregon State Police was arrested this morning on charges of first-degree theft and first-degree official misconduct. 37-year-old Paula Diane Bell was taken to Lincoln County Jail and placed on unpaid administrative leave. Her arrest came after a co-worker at the Newport Command Center noticed that the evidence room there was in a disheveled state and that evidence packaging had been opened. An undisclosed amount of cash was missing from the room. State troopers will conduct an audit of the Newport evidence room, as well as evidence rooms in McMinnville and in Tillamook, where Bell also has worked.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned for Tillicum Wawa, KABU's Native American news and culture show at 6 p.m. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy, with a high near 75 degrees. Tomorrow night, clouds will increase and lows will drop to around 52 degrees.
It's 5:32, time for Daily Commentary from Jim Hightower.
When asked what the world needs,